nobody is going to buy from you because you have a quota to meet, right? They're not going to buy from you or do business with you because you need the money. And they're not going to buy or do business with you just because you're a nice person. People are going to do business with you. They're going to buy from you because they believe that they will be better off by doing so than by not doing so.
Welcome to the Source of Commercial Real Estate podcast, where we talk to the experts in all asset classes of commercial real estate. Listen so you can grow your wealth, expand your portfolio, improve your mindset, and live an amazing life. And now, your host, Jonathan Hayek.
Welcome to the Source of Commercial Real Estate. I am your host, Jonathan Hayek, and today I am thrilled to have with me Bob Berg, co-author of The Go-Giver. Bob, for over 30 years, has been successfully showing entrepreneurs, leaders, and sales professionals how to communicate their value and accelerate their business growth. Although for years, he was best known for his sales classic, Endless Referrals, it's his business parable, The Go-Giver, co-authored with John David Mann, that has created a worldwide movement. While part of a four-book series, The Go-Giver itself has sold more than 1 million copies and has been translated into 30 languages. It was rated number 10 on Inc. magazine's list of the most motivational books ever written and was on HubSpot's 20 most highly rated sales books of all time. Bob is the founder of the Go-Giver Success Alliance, an online mentorship community for successful entrepreneurs, leaders, and sales professionals. And he publishes the very popular Daily Impact email, which I am a subscriber to. He's an advocate, supporter, and defender of the free enterprise system, believing that the amount of money one makes is directly proportional to how many people they serve. He's also an unapologetic animal fanatic and served on the board of directors of Furry Friends Adoption and Clinic in his hometown of Jupiter, Florida. Bob, thank you so much for joining me today. How are you doing?
I'm doing great, Jonathan. Thanks for having me with you.
I'm really looking forward to this conversation. Bob, why don't we start out by you telling us a little bit more about your background beyond what I just read, and what do you find yourself spending time on today?
Well, my background was as a broadcaster who got into, so I like to say, graduated into sales. And I really knew nothing about sales, so I floundered for the first few months until I was in a bookstore, found some books, one by Zig Ziglar, one by Tom Hopkins, and who are legends in the sales space, of course, and got those books. I was inspired just to know there were actually books on selling. I had no idea. This is 40 years ago, so it wasn't as prevalent back then as it is now. And unless you knew, you know, who knew? And so I just absorbed those books and began applying the information right away. And within a few weeks, my sales began to go through the roof. So that told me that if you have a system for accomplishing something, you can pretty much do anything within reason. I define a system simply as the process of predictably achieving a goal based on a logical and specific set of how-to principles, the key being predictability. You know, if it's been proven that by doing A, you'll get the desired results of B, then you know all you need to do is A and continue to do A and continue to do A, and you'll get the desired results of B. So that was, you know, that was great for me to know. And I really just got hooked on sales. I loved it. And I think the most fun part was really delving into personal development, which is such an important part of selling, because really success it's an inside job. I mean, it manifests outwardly, but it begins in here. It begins actually here in the head and intellect, and you get it into the heart and it becomes part of you, and you begin to grow, and that grow then, you know. So that was, I had a blast, you know, doing that. Eventually just got into sales management and teaching others how to sell, and then, you know, began a speaking career doing that same thing. So it's been a lot of fun.
Bob, it's interesting that there are just so many kind of overlayments in sales and personal development and entrepreneurship. You are I came to learn about you as you co-authored The Go-Giver, and that's been instrumental in my business and really has shifted the way I think about entrepreneurship and sales. So in the circles that I hear it, it's largely in real estate circles. That's where I'm in, but it's also popular in lots of entrepreneurship circles and sales circles. Do the concepts outlined in The Go-Giver apply to people outside of sales and entrepreneurship circles?
Yeah, the principles themselves are pretty much life principles. And you know, when we talk about success, and success has many definitions, it's really how one defines success for themselves. But I think whether we're talking about success in terms of financial, physical, spiritual, mental, emotional, social, relational, right? Whether we're talking about sales, whether we're talking about leadership, whether we're talking about being a family member or a friend or in a part of a community, you know, these principles that John David Mann and I discuss in the book, they absolutely apply across the board. In fact, one of the things we love knowing is how many groups and organizations outside of sales began to use the book as a study guide and as a book of the month, so to speak.
And I'll be completely transparent. Growing up as a kid, I was in some ways taught to believe that sales is this kind of icky thing that you should avoid. And really into my adult life, I was believing that and I didn't want to be associated with that. And so I always identified myself as I am not a salesperson. But then as I continued on and wanted to have more success in life, I would hear other people say this phrase that life is sales. Whether or not you're a door-to-door salesperson or cold calling people, there are so many concepts of sales that lead to success in life, whether it's relationships, negotiating in relationships with partners or children or coworkers. There are so many concepts of sales and entrepreneurship that lead to success in life. Have you found that to be true as well?
Oh, sure. And you bring up a good point regarding the reputation of sales, right? And the ickiness and so forth. And, you know, I often say that when people say they don't like selling, or they say, I could never sell, I don't like selling. It's not that they don't like selling. It's that they don't like what they think selling is. Because if you understand selling as being about trying to convince someone to buy something they don't want or need, and you, well, first of all, that's not selling. That's called being a con artist. And that's not selling. Selling by definition is really simply discovering what the other person does want, need, or desire and helping them to get it. That's what selling is. Interesting. The old English root of the word sell was selan, which meant to give, right? Sell, selan meant to give. So when you're selling, you're literally giving. Now, someone might say, well, wait a second, that's just semantics, Berg. You know, when you're selling, when you're in a selling presentation or conversation, when you're selling, what are you really giving that other person? Well, I suggest that when you're selling, you're giving them time, attention, counsel, education, empathy, and most of all, significant value. So when we look at selling from that frame, now we see selling as something very different. Now we see selling as something very benevolent. We see selling as something that's adding to the life of the other person.
And you touched on value. That is one of the first laws outlined right in The Go-Giver. And so I want to get into our discussion about The Go-Giver. And to start off, I want to ask you about your inspiration for writing the book. Can you give us a little background about what led to you authoring this book?
Well, many years ago, back in the mid-90s, my first book came out. It was called Endless Referrals. And the subtitle was Network Your Everyday Contacts into Sales. So it was kind of one of the first networking books that really came on the market. They were like myself and two other authors of networking books. You know, now there are hundreds of them and they're all great. I've read many of them and I learned something from all of them. But back then there were really just a few. And so what it was really about was It was written for entrepreneurs and salespeople who knew they had a great product or service. They knew it brought lots of value to others, but they didn't necessarily feel comfortable or confident going out into their local communities and building the kinds of relationships that would cause people to want to do business with them directly and or through referrals. So this was my system, right? That I would teach people how to have confidence and how to build these relationships. And the basic premise of Endless Referrals was that all things being equal, people will do business with and refer business to those people they know, like, and trust. And that's sort of been my calling card in a sense for, you know, for many, many years. That even made its way into the Go-Giver. But it was a, you know, how-to book. But since I had started in sales, I had loved reading business parables. You know, whether it was Og Mandino's Greatest Salesman in the World or Klassen's Richest Man in Babylon, or then in the late 70s, early 80s, you had Drs. Blanchard and Johnson, the 1 minute manager, 1 minute salesperson, you know, 1 minute this and that. Great, wonderful. And so I thought, wouldn't it be great if we could take the basic idea of endless referrals and turn it into a parable? Because, you know, parables are, they're fun. They connect, I think, on a deeper level because it's a story and stories connect heart to heart, right? But, you know, I can tell a story from stage. I'm a speaker, but that's different than writing a work of fiction. So fortunately, in the early 2000s, I began writing a monthly column for a magazine where a guy by the name of John David Mann was the co-author. And even back, was the editor-in-chief, excuse me. And even back then, he had a fantastic reputation as a great writer. He was a wonderful editor, but I also knew he was a great writer and a great guy, fantastic guy, very humble and very just... And so I just shared this idea with him, this kind of sketchy idea about with most of, you know, the principles from Endless Referrals, but about a guy who kind of went from, you know, a focus on himself to a focus on giving value to others. And but I had nothing really done with it. So I asked him if he'd be interested in being the co-author and really the lead writer and storyteller. And fortunately, he took a look at it and liked the idea and said yes. And so, you know, after we wrote the story in about 3 months, and when I say we, I mean, believe me, he was the lead writer. After the book was completed, our agent shopped it around and we got turned down over the course of a year. We got turned down by 24 New York publishing houses before the 25th one said yes. And they turned out to be a fantastic publishing partner for us.
Can you tell me more about that journey to publishing? I don't know how instrumental you were in talking with publishers, but being turned down 24 times and then on that 25th time it gets accepted, how involved in the process were you of getting all of those rejections, those 24 rejections, and what was it like to keep going and then to finally get that 25th acceptance?
So what John and I did was we really stayed open, okay, to what the publishers told our agent, okay? So now you had some that were like, well, you know, a parable just isn't the type of book we want to publish. Well, okay, that's not really an objection. That's a condition. You know, that's just not the book they want to do. That was fine. But then there were others who maybe said, you know, we just don't like the story, blah, blah, blah. Well, some people just aren't going to like what you do, and that's fine too. So we let that go. But then there were the ones who had critique that made sense. And it was really up to John and me to not let our egos get in the way and consider those, you know, the thoughtful kind of feedback and say, okay, do they have a point, right? Is the story not really there in this place? And do we need to make some changes here? And are we? And we got a lot of great feedback. And so started making changes. Now, one of the things that we got that didn't have anything really to do with the book directly, but it was that a couple of publishers in a row said that our platform wasn't big enough. Now, when a publisher says platform, what they mean is how many already buyers do you have for the book, right? That's what a platform is in the publishing world. And what it was is I knew we had a big enough platform, but I did not do a good enough job of communicating that. So I kind of redid that aspect of it and put together a whole new, you know, kind of promo reel and so forth that she could, that Margaret, our agent, could take to the publishing houses and so forth. So between everything, you know, the good critique and the, and, you know, reworking the, how we'd communicate the platform, by the time we were ready to meet the right publishing house, it happened.
It sounds like you used those, what some might call setbacks, to fuel you.
Like it, but you know, it's
it sounds like you used those critiques to move you forward. Absolutely. And I think things turned out okay for you all.
Yeah, you know, it turned out very well. And you know, again, the publishing house we ended up going with, Portfolio, an imprint of Penguin Random House, they turned out to be a great partner for us. Not only were they encouraging, and so they were very knowledgeable and they were immensely supportive, and so it couldn't have worked out better.
Well, let's get a little more into The Go-Giver. For those that have not read the book and are not familiar with it, the premise is there's a young, ambitious salesperson, Joe, who wants to make more money, wants to do well in his profession. And over the course of a week, he is introduced to various people and taught 5 laws of stratospheric success. So, Bob, would you mind going through these 5 laws of stratospheric success? And feel free to briefly comment on each one.
Yeah, no, I'd love to. And, you know, Joe's issue was he was a good kid, you know, good young man and ambitious and aggressive. And he was, you know, looking to really do great things, but he was very focused on himself, right? It was really, it was all about Joe and who owes Joe what and Joe's quota and this and that. And you know, one thing I've said for years when I've spoken at sales conferences is nobody is going to buy from you because you have a quota to meet, right? They're not going to buy from you or do business with you because you need the money. And they're not going to buy or do business with you just because you're a nice person. People are going to do business with you. They're going to buy from you because they believe that they will be better off by doing so than by not doing so. Okay. That is human nature. That is how it is. And it's good that it's that way because it means those salespeople who are able to really communicate value and please that consumer, that's the person who's going to create that environment for the, you know, for the business to take place. And that's what Joe needed to really learn. So as you said, he met a mentor by the name of Pindar who would teach him and introduce him to some other people during the week. And there were 5 laws that were shared. The laws themselves are the laws of value, compensation, influence, authenticity, and receptivity. So the first one is the law of value, which says your true worth is determined by how much more you give in value than you take in payment. It sounds counterproductive, counterintuitive, give more in value than I take in payment. Isn't that a recipe for bankruptcy? But what we know is there's a difference between price and value. Price is a dollar figure. It's a dollar amount. It's finite. It is what it is. Value, on the other hand, is the relative worth or desirability of a thing, of something, to the end user or beholder. In other words, what is it about this thing, this product, service, concept, idea, what have you, that brings so much worth to another person that they will willingly exchange their money for this value and be ecstatic that they did while you make a very healthy profit. I like to give the example of the accountant who you hire to do your taxes. She charges you $1,000, but she saves you $5,000 in taxes. She provides you and your family with the security and peace of mind of knowing it was done correctly. She gave you more in value, well over $5,000 than what she took in payment, $1,000 price. So you feel great about it, but she also made a very healthy profit because it was worth it to her to trade her time, her energy, her knowledge for that $1,000. And in any free market-based exchange, simply meaning no one's forced to do business with anyone else, in any free market-based exchange, there should always be 2 profits, the buyer profits and the seller profits, because each of them come away better off afterwards than they were beforehand. But this happens because the focus is on the client, right? This is why John David Mann and I say that money is simply an echo of value. It's the thunder to values lightning, meaning the value must be the focus. The value comes first. The money you receive is simply a natural result of the value you provide. Law number two, the law of compensation, says your income is determined by how many people you serve and how well you serve them, right? So it's not just a matter of providing immense value, which is important, but it can't stop there. Law number two is about how many lives you impact with that value. So we could say exceptional value plus significant reach equals very high compensation. Law number three, the law of influence, says your influence is determined by how abundantly you place other people's interests first. Again, counterintuitive sounding, right? And yet, the greatest leaders, top influencers, most sustainably successful money earners, this is how they run their lives and conduct their businesses. They're always looking out for the benefit of the other person. Now, let me clarify that, if I may, though, and qualify this, because this is important. When we say place the other person's interests first, we don't mean you should be anybody's doormat or a martyr or self-sacrificial in any way. Not at all. It's simply understanding, as Joe learned from several of the mentors, and as you and I discussed a bit earlier, the golden rule of sales, of business, is that all things being equal, people will do business with and refer business to those people they know, like, and trust. Now, here's the thing. There's no faster, more powerful, or more effective way to elicit those feelings toward you from others than by genuinely moving from that I focus or me focus to that other focus, looking to, as Sam, one of the mentors, advised Joe, make your win all about the other person's win. Law number four, the law of authenticity, says the most valuable gift you have to offer is yourself. In this part of the story, Deborah shared that, you know, all the skills in the world, the sales skills, technical skills, people skills, as important as they are, and they are all indeed very important, they're also all for naught if you don't come at it from your true authentic core. But when you do, when you show up as yourself day after day, week after week, month after month, people feel good about you, they feel comfortable with you, and they feel safe with you. And the reason why is they know who they're getting. Right? People want to make sense of their world in a world that often doesn't make a lot of sense. So that consistency, that authenticity inspires trust. And then law number five is the law of receptivity, which says the key to effective giving is to stay open to receiving. This really means nothing more than understanding that, yeah, you breathe out, you also have to breathe in. It's not one or the other. You breathe out carbon dioxide, you breathe in oxygen. You breathe out, which is giving, you breathe in, which is receiving. You know, we get a lot of negative messages from the world around us about money, about business, about prosperity, about abundance, and it's a shame. But again, it's part of life. So it's important for us to know that giving and receiving are not opposite concepts. Giving and receiving are simply two sides of the very same coin, and they work in tandem, right? You give value, you touch the lives of many, you place their interests first, you come at it authentically, and that creates the what we call benevolent context for abundance to come to you. You've got to be ready, willing, and able to receive it with gratitude. And that's a quick kind of Reader's Digest look at the five laws.
All these five concepts, on the one hand, they make sense, but on the other hand, they're a little counterintuitive. And so many people, when they're starting a business or they're in sales, you talked earlier about quotas and having to meet quotas, and people want to make money. And when they go into a business, start a venture, or have a sales goal to meet, it's about making money. And our goal is, well, is this going to make me money? Is this call going to make me money? Is this business venture going to make me money? And I know you have an opinion on this question. So is that question, is this going to make me money, is that a bad question to ask?
Yeah, it's not a bad question. It's a great question. It's just a bad first question, right? First, you must ask, does it serve, right? You can even ask, is there a market for it? Or can I develop a market for it? Because if you just ask first, will it make money? Remember, nobody's going to buy from you because you want to make money. So if that's your first question, you're kind of just putting the cart before the horse, right? First ask, will it serve? Do people need, want, and afford it? Is this something there's a market for now or I can develop, right? You've got to know that it's going to serve people first. Now, if it does, if there's a market for it, or you're persuaded that, you know, you feel strongly enough there's a market for it, now you've got to ask, will it make money? Because you can have a whole lot of people buying your product, but if it's not, you know, if you're losing money on every exchange, well, you've got a very expensive hobby, right? And hobbies are great, but that's not what we're talking about here. So no, you've got to ask, will it make money? But just don't ask that one first. First, will it serve? Does it serve? Is there a market for it? Will this help people? Is this something people will buy? Then ask, okay, will it make money?
Bob, as we get towards the tail end of our conversation, an underlying theme of the Go-Giver is mentorship. You've got Joe, who is ambitious, and all these people come into his life, and they all mentor him in a certain way. I know you had an experience when you were younger with what you call a drive-by mentor. So I'd love to hear the story and talk a little bit about your thoughts on mentorship.
Yeah, and I was always very lucky to meet people and have mentors who seemed to come at the right time and place. And a drive-by mentor, and this is, you know, one particular experience. And this, the term came about, I was in a conversation with a great friend of mine, a person I consider a mentor. Her name is Dondi Scumaci. She's a great leadership authority. And I think she coined the term drive-by mentor. And I just agreed with her because that's usually how it is. She's so brilliant. And a drive-by mentor is simply someone who comes along at just the right time. You may have never met them before or had any kind of significant relationship with them. You may never see them again, but at that particular time, they happen to have given you a piece of advice that you were ready to receive. And that happened with me a couple of years after I got into sales. Again, I had learned sales after a slow start. I was doing well, but then I was working for another company selling a high ticket item. And I was in a slump and I was not getting out of that slump. And I really made a mistake in thinking I became like Joe in that I was focused on myself and making a sale and getting out of the slump and so forth. And I came back to the office one day rather disgusted at myself. And there was a guy who worked there at the company where I was. He was an older guy who was not in the sales department. I think he was an engineer or something. And he retired soon after. Didn't know him very well. He's the kind of guy you passed in the hall and just said, you know, hello. But not a nice guy, though. And he asked me, you know, he saw me and he said, you know, Berg, he was a last name guy, you know, kind of guy. He said, Berg, can I give you some advice? And I said, yeah, please do. I need it. And he said, if you want to make money in sales, don't have making money as your target. Your target, he said, is serving others. Now, when you hit the target, he continued, you'll get a reward. And that reward will come in the form of money. And you can do with that money whatever you choose. But never forget, he said, the money is simply the reward for hitting the target. It ain't the target itself. Your target is serving others. And what I really received from that was the understanding that great salesmanship is never about the salesperson. Great salesmanship is never about the product or service, as important as those are. That's not what the sales ever about. Great salesmanship is about the other person. It's about adding value to the life of another human being. I guess we could say it's about another person's life being better just because you are part of it. And I think that when we can approach sales from that foundational premise, then we're really 9 steps ahead of the game in a 10-step game.
It's a great place to leave it. The book is The Go-Giver. This is Bob Berg, and his co-author is John David Mann. Bob, is there a place that listeners can connect with you, pick up The Go-Giver, learn more about you? Where would you like to send people?
The best place is Berg, BURG.com. While there, they can check out the book and read a chapter. They can also subscribe to my daily impact e-newsletter.
Great. And you and I connected on LinkedIn. I'm sure that would also be a good place to connect with you, Bob.
They can find that. Yeah, absolutely.
Thank you so much for joining me today. Your book is an inspiration. It's impacted me, and I know it's impacted a lot of other people. So I appreciate you and John for writing the book and you for being with me today.
Thank you, Jonathan. My pleasure.
Listeners, thank you so much for joining me and Bob today. We appreciate you so much. If you enjoyed this conversation, feel free to reach out to either one of us. We would love to talk with you. Thank you so much for listening. Until next time, take care.
This content is for entertainment and informational purposes only. It is not financial advice, and it is not an invitation to buy or sell real estate or make any investment decisions.